In the fabled land of Northern California, nestled in the Valley of Sacramento, two friends begin a journey to enlighten the world about their experience living life as a Xenial. But what is a Xenial, you may ask? If you wish to know, then follow them on their adventures.
Welcome to the Xenial Chronicles. This is James.
This is Mike.
And, well, after weeks of things kind of reopening and the world starting to come back to a little bit of normal, we are going back into a lockdown of things because the world is not back to normal yet.
Yep.
I wonder if there were people who could have predicted this. Smart people.
Wow. That open had a lot up. Of, You're opening up strong, of, bro.
I mean, that had some scientific models to look at and some math that they had done and some historical data to look back on. I wonder if people could have predicted this. Maybe they could have. Maybe they couldn't have. All that I can say is that I've been making sure to do my part, staying at home. When I do go out, I do make sure to wear my mask. And I just hope others realize that I'm not doing it to necessarily protect myself. I'm doing it to protect everybody else as well. Yeah. That's all I'm going to say on the subject. But we are back in lockdown within this week. I know over the next couple of days, the governor of California has announced counties that we live in are going back into the lockdown phase.
Yep.
So we'll see how that goes. Maybe that'll give people more time to be listening to us. Hi, people listening to us. Hopefully you enjoy. So obviously there's a lot been going on still in the world. A lot of newsworthy stuff over the last week or so. And I was admittedly having some trouble coming up with any topics this week. And I talked to you about that. And you've been busy with yours and your wife's new gaming channel, which is I already got a lot of good response, by the way.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
You've also been busy with your recording education channel. Is that a good way to describe it?
I would say so. Music, yeah. I mean,
music and recording education channel.
I would consider it like a music variety channel.
Music variety channel.
Yeah.
Okay, you've been busy with that too, because you have a kind of interesting band that you're getting to do some cool stuff with.
Oh, yeah.
That channel. I'm not gonna give any more information than that. If anybody wants any more information, you're listening to this, find Mike's music education channel, which is what, Mike?
It is called Ruling Note Music. We are on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook.
So find that and see what fun things Mike is getting to do this week. He was super excited when he told me about it. I was excited for him.
Oh yeah.
But you know, that's been keeping you busy. So I know you weren't necessarily thinking about anything beyond that, which you shouldn't be. That's an important thing to think about. And I don't do much else except sit at home and watch children and refresh myself on TV that I've missed over the years. watching a lot of old South Park reruns, some funny stuff.
Oh yeah, South Park is still great.
But as we were talking, and the idea finally came to me what we're going to talk about today. And what I want to talk about is something that's always irritated me. Now, I'm just an ordinary guy that admittedly has consumed a lot of sci-fi, fantasy, comic book media. Mm-hmm. There's people that have consumed much more than me. I know that. I've met some of these people. But I have friends that are some of these people. But I have consumed a pretty decent amount. And one thing has always really, really bothered me. Every time I watch movies, every time I read comic books, read books, anything to do with it. It's the fact that there's all these wondrous things that either people or the scientific technologies have the capability of doing.
Yeah.
And I get that for the most part, they're trying to do it for story purposes and to make the story be dramatic and more enjoyable and last for a decent amount of time instead of, you know, a battle being over instantaneously.
But oh, yeah.
I have found that the most irritating thing to me oftentimes is that these beings that have these powers or that have the access to this technology never really use it in a creative manner.
Okay.
I won't say ever. There's a few instances where they may, but these things are almost never used in a very creative manner. And as a result, it kind of irritates me because I think to myself, there are so many better ways that these superheroes can use their power or these people can use their technology. And I wanted to just talk about a few of them. Come up with some ideas of where we've seen, and I mean, your experience with superhero stuff, experience with a lot of sci-fi stuff. Come up with instances where it's like, you know, if they can do this, why didn't they do it this way? Why didn't they use the power to do this way? And I'm going to start off with the inspiration for the conversation.
Okay.
Which is with one of your favorite things, Star Trek.
Right. Yes.
Because we were talking right before we started recording. This is what kind of gave us this idea. Star Trek. Now, there are many different cool scientific inventions in Star Trek, many of them that have been created in real life. You know, the communicators, we have cell phones that work even better than the communicators. Hell, our cell phones combine like 5 or 6 different items into it that were in existence in Star Trek. About the only thing it's not a phaser. That's about the only thing it's not. which is a good thing, because even the even having a phaser that just stuns, you don't want everybody carrying that around like they do their phone. That could be a scary circumstance, especially especially those people that put the phone in like the back pocket of their pants. Could you imagine if there was a phaser setting on that and you sat wrong? It's like why you don't put a gun into the waistband of your pants. You're going to blow your nuts off.
Right.
At some point or another, you run the risk of blowing your nuts off.
Yep.
And that is just not an okay thing to have happen to yourself. And I say that you run the risk of it because it has happened. People have done it to themselves.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, so like, definitely.
Yeah. But having a phaser in your back pocket, if you sit wrong, then what do you do? You either stun your leg, or you shoot a hole through it. Not a good thing to have happen. But that's not the piece
the
of technology.
The concept of just like setting
was...
your leg to stun and then like trying to get up to get on the bus and just completely falling over.
Yeah. Yeah.
All you get is dead leg. I love it.
Yeah. You got to put your weight on that right leg and it's just like, it's not there. Oh, man.
Full buckle.
And then as you're laying on the ground, it's like, damn it. My phone is set on stun.
My phone was set on stun. Damn it.
You know, the ambulance shows up and they're like, what's wrong? They see the person laying there. Oh, you had your phone set on stun again, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yes. Idiots. That's why we shouldn't give phasers to 15-year-olds. But anyway, I digress. The actual technology that I was talking about, though, that really inspired this was the transporter technology. Now, I have issues with the transporter technology and the idea that, first of all, it does not. For those listening, it does not transport your molecules to a different location. It basically annihilates your molecules. Every bit of you is annihilated, completely destroyed. And then at a different location, out of basically nothing, your molecules are completely reconstituted in the exact same form that they were at the original location. Now, that has all kinds of weird implications anyway, considering the fact that they're saying that they can completely map the thoughts and memories and everything that's in your brain in one machine and then have it completely reproduced in the other machine, and there's actually no cognitive loss whatsoever. Although maybe there is, maybe that's why, as you know, seasons of the show went on and episode, you know, our movies went on, you know, Captain Kirk got a little crazier. and maybe it messes.
Maybe it's all that time being spent on the transporter.
And maybe there's also the fact that you have to consider that half of the weight that is being transported is a human body. The other half of it is the various bacteria that live inside of humans.
Right.
Maybe the fact that maybe there's some gut bacteria that doesn't get replicated properly on the other side of the transporter. Maybe that can explain Kirk's weight loss or weight gain issues. You know what I mean? Maybe he was having gut bacteria issues. That could be a thought. But while there's implications and problems there that definitely would be interesting to find out about, I'm sure Gene Roddenberry didn't care about that. He just was like, well, what's a quick way to get them places? Well, we can't really afford the budget of filming the, you know, an away ship going down to planets. Let's just put some glitter in a glass and swirl it around and superimpose it on a guy while we make the guy disappear.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then that'll work, right? That'll do it.
Yep, that'll work.
So that's not my problem, though. That's not my problem. My problem is...
That all you can forgive.
That's not necessarily that I can forgive it. That's something for a discussion at a later time as to what all the implications okay. are. My problem is this technology is not being used in a way that is really to a great benefit. And here's how I'll explain this.
Okay.
There are some people who have an issue with the rebooted Star Treks. I kind of like them in the sense that it was nice to see J.J. Abrams try to audition to direct a Star Wars movie. That was nice to see. It was also nice to finally see a Federation starship actually really engage in battle, in the sense of it's not just firing a one proton torpedo at a time and like one blast from a single phaser at a time.
Okay.
But like in the opening of the first new Star Trek movie, the Kelvin just goes crazy. It's firing proton torpedoes. There's like 30 different phaser installations that are firing out at this Romulan ship. It's right. just like, yeah, it's going, this is exactly what I
haywire.
This is everything I always wanted to see
yeah.
a Star Trek. This is what made Star Trek boring, was watching the space battles and be like, oh, they're firing one torpedo. They're firing one phaser. This is just like stuff firing everywhere. Of course, actually, it's funny, I make the noise. But one of the best shots in that movie is when they go outside the Kelvin for a moment, mm-hmm. and there's no sound. Absolutely no sound,
because yes,
there is no sound.
I thought
in
that
place.
Was, yeah, no, that was accurate, and it was very, very well put out, too. It was
a
very well-planned
no
shot. It added so much drama to the scene.
And as a result of there being no sound in space, no one can hear you scream. Just want to reiterate that.
Yes,
but anyway,
yes.
So you have this transporter, right? Mm-hmm. And you have this new reboot of the series, and you get Benedict Cumberbatch. I'll say his real name instead of the name I like to say for him.
Thank
you. You don't have to bleep anything. and he plays the part of Khan. Now,
yes,
I don't want to get into the whole fact that Khan Noonan Singh is supposed to be a Indian. And Indian, I mean from the Indian subcontinent, not a Native American, which
right.
is the appropriate term to use for that. He is an Indian. He's supposed to be an Indian character. He was originally played by was Ricardo Montalban Spanish or Mexican?
I'm not entirely positive.
Sure.
I never looked it up.
I believe he may have been Mexican, but, anyway, he was played by a person of color, but not necessarily, or could have been played by a person of color, but
right.
still was not played by an Indian, as he should have been back in the original series. And in this newer reboot, you would really expect him to be played by an Indian, especially when they have the capability of finding good Indian actors to be able to play the parts. But
yeah.
I digress. You have Benedict Cumberbatch playing Khan, and Khan is supposed to be a tactical genius,
yes.
which I find Benedict Cumberbatch more believable as a tactical genius than Ricardo Montalban, just personally. Ricardo Montalban was more about fine Corinthian leather and showing off his chest hair, which is great for the time it came out in. But I can see Benedict
Cumberbatch. No.
But I can see Benedict Cumberbatch having a little bit more of a lethality to him, and he can play scary a little bit better. But he's supposed to be this tactical genius, right?
Right. That's his thing.
And what does he do? He creates the biggest warship. He helps create like this big giant warship. This is in the second new Star Trek movie. He
mm-hmm.
he helps create this big giant warship that's bigger than the rest. They have a they figure out this transwarp drive, which can catch up to other ships and warp. That being able to catch up to other ships and warp and fire upon them,
mm-hmm.
that's a good military innovation. Don't get me wrong. That's top shelf right there.
Yeah.
You have a giant ship that can be crewed by less people. Okay. I guess that's kind of cool, although I'm of the opinion if you have a giant ship that can be crewed by less people, then you make less areas of it need to have atmosphere, because if you have less areas with atmosphere, you can solve a whole other host of problems. You can take a lot more damage on the ship, because if there's no atmosphere, there's no fire. So even if those areas are destroyed, you don't... So, I mean, there's all kinds of issues. I've had a lot of thought about how to design a proper movie spaceship. We'll get into that another time.
Okay. But
back to the transporter issue. Okay. You have this transporter, this beautiful thing that's supposed to be able to be intricate enough. It's dialed in intricately enough that it can make sure to record and encode the nuances of the brain to be able to replicate it elsewhere.
Okay.
Exactly the same, so the memories stay and all that stays. So this thing should be able to be like to almost the atomic level, be able to, you know, read everything that it's doing, right?
Okay.
And lock onto whatever it's needing to lock onto.
Right.
So why has this not been used as an offensive weapon? In the sense of, if you're attacking another ship, we've seen, in fact, in that movie, Admiral Marcus locks onto his daughter, Carol Marcus. Sorry for spoilers for a movie that's like way old. But he locks onto his daughter, Carol, as she's trying to run off the bridge and transports her from the Enterprise to his ship.
Right.
So you can do that, ship-to-ship transfer, lock onto somebody who's moving.
Right.
I mean, in the first one, they lock onto Kirk and Sulu as they're falling off of a drilling platform. They're in a free fall.
Right.
So this has the ability to fine-tune what it locks onto. So why isn't this used as an offensive weapon? You're facing an opponent. Lock onto the opposing ship's captain's head only. And just teleport their, you know, transport their head out into space. Or, if you want to be really fun, transport all their internal organs out into space. And they just, their body cavity just sinks in and they're dead instantaneously. It's like, you're talking to the captain, right? So, captain, are you going to surrender? No, we're not going to surrender. Bloop. Captain slumps down. First officer, I just transported your captain's internal organs out into space. You want to surrender or you want me to do the same thing to you? You know what I'm saying? This thing has the ability to be that fine-tuned enough to read your brain patterns. You should be able to transport any part of a person that you want. Why has this not been used as an offensive weapon before?
I mean,
I don't get it.
Theoretically speaking, technically that may be able to be done. I've never seen somebody try to do that, and I would like to now that you're mentioning it, just to see, like, because here's the deal. When it comes down to the protocols for Starfleet itself, right? Transporter tech and all that kind of stuff. Starfleet themselves can hold themselves to a certain general set of rules. Like you got things like the Prime Directive. You're familiar with the Prime Directive.
Oh, they break that crap all the time.
Oh, they totally do. But
they always, especially during the Kirk era.
Prime Directive, he was all over green bitches everywhere, man. But
yeah, if there was some hot chick that was, you know, some cool shade or whatever, and she was going to give it up.
Yeah.
I mean, but that gets into the whole idea that they encountered a lot of planets where there was mammal reproduction. That's a whole different story. Because,
right.
if you don't have mammals, then you don't have breasts and you don't have vaginas.
Okay.
It's a whole different thing if they're not mammals. So, but anyway. I understand that Starfleet may have the regulations and how they're supposed to conduct various things. And Starfleet is not a military organization. Starfleet is an exploratory organization that sometimes has to engage in military actions.
Right. So
I understand that.
That's all I'm getting at is that with situations like that, I could see Starfleet themselves, and here I'll let me explain to the end of it, because it would make sense. This still makes sense to be the capability of this happening still makes total sense, and the reason why is because if you were to look at how Starfleet has their rules written, I'm pretty sure they have something in there that the transporters themselves can't lock on to something unless it's an entire being. Or something like that. Some dumb rule about a Starfleet transporter, but it doesn't say that about a Klingon transporter or a Romulan transporter or any of the other warring. Morally obligated, less than morally sound.
No, it may actually be that it has to be able to. Because I've never seen an instance where they're able to. to like transport something out of somebody's hand. So
no, they have to lock onto the whole being, right? And that's actually how you can transport more than one person. But here's the crazy part. Okay, get this: you can fool somebody, you can fool the transporter to transport more than one person simply by grabbing the other person. That's a MacGuffin they use all the time.
And actually, you know what? I just my theory. I just blew a hole in my theory from the second Star Trek movie. They take one of the missiles that Khan had. You don't know what it's called, torpedoes.
Right.
That Admiral Marcus had put on the Enterprise.
Yeah.
They take one. Carol Marcus and Dr. McCoy take it down to a planet, and McCoy's arm gets stuck. No, Marcus's arm gets stuck in it. Somebody's arm gets stuck in it. It's McCoy's, actually. McCoy's arm gets stuck in it, and they're unable to differentiate McCoy from the torpedo. So it's not that fine-tuned. So, okay.
Okay, so,
as it exists right now, I guess what I'm guessing is maybe whatever mathematical equations, algorithms, whatever, that they use to be able to do the brain mapping to get the exact brain mapping correct,
right,
and all of that portion of it, is not nuanced enough to be able to do individual body parts.
Well, you're not actually that off. You're really not, you're missing another thing. You're missing another piece of the puzzle here. The same technology that's used to transport is also used to replicate. Transportation and replication are, in theory, the same exact thing. The difference is that replication is where you save a copy of the object that you've destroyed, and then you can duplicate and replicate that copy as many times as you see fit. The replicator is used to produce food. So if you want a steak, you don't have to produce the whole fucking cow. You just produce the steak itself, right? Which means it has the capability of keeping the database of individual body parts.
But the thing is, if the database is created with the original model of the steak, as a steak to be able to replicate it. So what about
medical usage though? Recreating body parts from the DNA that already exists in a person, they can replicate limbs.
Yeah, but that would work in a slightly different fashion, because again, you're dealing with the annihilation and then the replication. Because with the transporter, it's locking onto the thing as it is at that exact moment.
Right.
Whereas if you're replicating a body part later, you can do it with a DNA scaffolding, making those things. That's different. So
interesting.
My exact plan wouldn't work, but there's still the idea of just transport a dude out into space. The whole dude.
Yeah, no. I would like to see that. I think
forget the removing parts of them. Just transport a dude out into space. Just in the same scenario, it's like, yeah, I just transported your captain out into space. You want to go next?
Right.
And I'm sure there are certain shields that are supposed to help and stop with transporting. But I'm just saying, transporters could be used for things that are a little bit more interesting than just getting from place to place and as a plot device.
Well, they've broke down the shield thing too. What you do is a shield is a force field that vibrates at a specific, you know, hyper frequency.
If you know what that frequency is,
you can actually penetrate it without actually going through it. You go straight through it without causing a hole or anything, goes right through it. So if you know that, then you can actually transport somebody or transport an object or a person off that ship.
If you know the frequency of the shield. You can fire a proton torpedo through it as well, as long as you know the correct frequency.
Yes, yeah, I loved that part. I loved that trick. That was fantastic. That was one of my favorite Star Trek moments.
Which one is that in?
That's the Klingons firing photon torpedoes. That's Generations.
It is. Yes, you're right. Because they get
Generations.
Because they
implant the camera in Geordi's visor, and then he's an engineer. They're like, that's the frequency. Match it. Now fire. Yeah. Yeah. That was cool. I loved that. That was actually one of my favorite parts of Star Trek.
It was a decent moment from an otherwise terrible film. I mean, let's be honest. It's actually, interestingly enough, it's the only Star Trek film that I actually, only one of the older Star Trek films that I actually own.
Uh-huh.
Definitely not my favorite Star Trek film of the older stuff. That would have to go with Voyage Home. Yes, I know it's funny, but God damn it, I just love going back to San Francisco and saving the whales. It's a great movie.
That was a good
double
one.
Double dumbass on you.
Computer. Computer. He picks up the mouse. Computer talks to the mouse. That was so great.
it's a great moment. If you don't know what we're talking about, go watch Star Trek IV: The Voyage Home. And have some pizza. Order some pizza.
There was always
order pizza. I like Italian.
Dude, that broke me when one day I'm at work at a retail establishment that I'm not working at right now. And a buddy of mine who must have seen that movie at that point, a lot of people have seen that movie, but what he does at one point, somebody asked him if, I think somebody asked him if he could find a certain item. And he goes, oh yeah, hold on one moment. And I swear to God, while he's working, this guy leans into the computer monitor and just screams, computer! Out of nowhere, right into the monitor in the middle of the floor, and the customer and I and him, dude, and he does it straight faced. No, just doesn't break. And he yells like twice. And for some reason, it was the goofiest, funniest fucking thing I'd ever seen in my life.
Well, double that mass on him. Not really. That could actually be quite amusing.
Yeah.
Gotta break up the workday some way or another.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway,
I yell at the card machine sometimes.
my original thought of teleporting transporting body parts away may not work, but still, transport a dude into outer space. Just do it. All right? There's no time to waste with it. I did like the fact that one of the things that Khan did say was to target the atmospherics in the Enterprise in that movie and knock out the atmospherics and basically make it so that the entire ship vented out into space. Because, I mean, that's one of those things. It's like,
yeah,
you really want to take out a ship in space? Just make it vent out to space.
Yeah.
Make it so they have no more atmospherics.
Yep.
Again, the idea of being able to have a really small crew on a ship and make most of the ship's areas non-atmospheric areas, because then you have so many things that work out better by having less atmospheric areas. You have to carry so much less equipment on a ship that has less atmospheric areas, because you don't have to worry about pressurizing every single inch of the inside of that ship. It's a completely pointless thing to do. And especially in a battle situation, you can take a crap ton of damage to all these pieces without starting fires and big old things if there's no atmosphere in
right,
the areas
exactly.
that are taking the damage.
Yeah, it does. It causes a lot less damage overall. And
years ago, I was thinking about making a movie about space combat, and the ship that I was going to design was for the main protagonist to use. The majority of the ship was created in such a way that it was a framework more than anything else, with a hull and covering, but no atmosphere except for a control module near the inside as center as humanly possible within the ship,
mm-hmm.
so that it could take tons of damage before any essential systems or people were harmed in any way, shape, or form.
Whoa, interesting. Okay.
And the entire purpose of it being basically a giant space warship that would go into battle and just right in the thick of battle, destroying everything that it could. It often would ram things in part of its destruction, because its goal was to take out other ships that were, you know, had atmospheric areas in the entire ship. All you need to do is punch the right kind of hole in it.
Yep.
And those ships were in trouble, and this thing could just take a pounding until anything major happened to it.
Right.
And so it was kind of an undefeated warship.
Oh, that's cool.
That was,
okay.
That was kind of the purpose and design of it.
I like that idea. That's
type
pretty cool.
It was set up for the type of warfare that would be an entirely different type of warfare than what you're normally dealing with. But anyway, I digress. Moving on to another kind of power or technological innovation. This one is specifically a mutant power. And I've heard other people talk about this, but this has always stuck with me. Probably one of the most popular Marvel comic mutants, especially in this modern era, has got to be Wolverine. Am I wrong?
No, he is. He is one of the most popular.
I mean, when you consider the fact that the X-Men movies, Fox's X-Men movie, should really be titled Wolverine and Friends, because literally...
they literally had a cartoon series called Wolverine and the X-Men after the X-Men films came out, too.
Which is a more apt description of the direction that that film took with the X-Men. I mean, X-Men were around for decades before Wolverine was introduced.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And made a part of the X-Men. And while he, even in the original X-Men cartoon from the 90s, the good X-Men cartoon from the 90s, he was an important character, but he wasn't like the be-all, end-all character like he was in the X-Men movies. I mean, those were all about Wolverine's story and Wolverine's journey.
Right.
You have characters like Cyclops, who actually does have some interesting things that happen to him within the comic book stuff.
Yeah.
The comic book continuity. I mean, his brother is an interesting character. His other brother is an interesting character. His father was a freaking space pirate.
Yep.
I mean, how interesting is that? But, you know, in the movie, he's just relegated to somebody who is kind of a douche. sorry, in the exact words, you're a dick. That's what he's relegated to.
Yeah.
But
God, it's been a while since I've seen that.
Here's the thing about Wolverine. And I've seen other people post this. He has the ability to save thousands upon thousands of people on a yearly basis. If he wasn't so worried about popping out his claws and, you know, scratching people up and whatnot. This is a guy who, and admittedly, I don't know his blood type, but this is a guy that could continually donate every major organ that can be donated.
Yeah, you just remove it and it would grow back almost immediately.
Exactly.
And I'm curious, what his blood type is, though. Would that be a blood type issue?
Yes, it is. Oh, definitely it is. It's a blood type issue, and it's an androgen issue. There's so many issues involved to make sure that he could.
I was going to say, like, donate to research, though.
Yeah, you could donate for any purpose.
Figure it out. Yeah.
I mean, yes, he does feel pain. Sorry. I mean, and anesthetics don't necessarily work very well on him because of the healing factor.
Right. I wonder if you could knock him out, or do you just have to, like, cut his liver out while he's alive?
I believe there is a form of sedation for him, but it really takes a lot and it doesn't work for very long.
Yeah.
It's like other superheroes that have super fast healing factors, like the Flash, for instance. Mm-hmm. His metabolism and his healing factor is so fast that he can't ever really get drunk.
Oh, that's great. Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, the Flash can't get drunk. Technically, it's really hard for even Wolverine to get drunk.
Yeah,
but I'm just saying, dude could donate organs. And it's like he could donate limbs if he wanted to, and it'll regenerate.
Yeah. Yeah.
Same with Deadpool. Although
yep.
Deadpool would probably do it. That's probably the difference. Although then Deadpool would probably, whoever he gave organs to, he'd probably stalk the person forever. And like let's say he gave somebody like a kidney or something, he would like find the person, walk up behind them, rest his head up against there, and like, ooh, I can hear my kidney gurgling. That's amazing. Because that's kind of the weird things that Deadpool would do.
Yeah.
Are you making sure not to drink too much caffeine or milk so that you don't end up with kidney stones? Kidney stones would be bad. Don't want to hurt that kidney. Smack a coffee out of their hand. No, you can't have that.
The hell is wrong with you? Yeah, no, that'd be a total Deadpool maneuver.
It would be, but I mean, that's the thing is, you have these mutants with this healing factor, like again, Wolverine and Deadpool. Come on, let's donate some organs.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, they did make him at least in the worst. This is hard to say that it's the worst X-Men movie. I will say this much. The X-Men movie series should have learned at this point to never, ever, ever bring back the Dark Phoenix character. Because in live action, they have never pulled it off. It has been in two movies, and both of those movies were the worst X-Men movies completely, and possibly some of the worst comic book movies ever. If it weren't for like the Catwoman movie and Batman and Robin. I mean, X-Men are awful. X-Men Last Stand and X-Men Dark Phoenix, or is it just Phoenix? Whatever it is. Both those movies were just completely awful. And the same factor is Dark Phoenix. It's a character that is, if it's not done right, it destroys everything. It's really hard to do the character right.
Yeah.
At least in Last Stand, he's the one that confronts her, and she's like shredding his body, and it keeps falling apart and then regrowing and falling apart and regrowing.
Yeah.
Which is inconsistent on how his healing factor works. But still, he was the only one that could defeat her because he's the only one that could get close enough to her with the healing factor. Okay, I get it. Fine. That works. But still, it's like, you know, use the healing factor for something more than, oh, look, he can get beat up and get right back up. You know what I mean? Use it for some good. Help some people. Give a kid a heart. Because kids should not be dying of heart failure. That shouldn't happen, man. That just should not be the way things are. Things happen that way because, you know, life is chaotic. But, like, if you could give a kid a heart so he doesn't die of heart failure at, like, 7 years old, nobody wants to have that happen.
Right.
Give the damn kid a heart. I'm just saying. I'd do it. If I had a healing factor like that, hell yeah, I'd do it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'm just saying. That's, you know. All right, we're at a point where we can take a break.
Oh, okay.
So we're
going
to take a break right now. When we come back, we'll come up with a few more powers and technologies that, quite frankly, are just not used correctly, including some Star Wars ones.
Oh, which okay.
For a while, weren't used correctly, and then they were.
Oh, but really? Okay.
That still aren't.
All right.
So we'll be back in a minute.
All right. Hey, friends. This is Mike from the Xenial Chronicles, reminding you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Zenchron, spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N, to keep up to date on all things TXC. And please check out our official website, thezenialchronicles.com, or if that's too much to type, zenchron.com. Thanks again for listening, and now, back to the show.
And we are back, everybody.
Woohoo!
So, I think I'm going to dive right into the Star Wars issues.
Okay.
Because, and again, there's specific things I'm going to focus on in Star Wars. I'm not going to focus on, like, the fact that, this is a problem with any space movie, by the way, the fact that if there's artificial gravity on your ships, that means there has to be artificial gravity generator somewhere, and that means that the way that artificial gravity has to work with those artificial gravity generators is that the closer you are to the artificial gravity generator, it actually would increase the gravity.
Oh, okay. Oh, I think I follow.
So, like, for instance, if the artificial gravity generators were at the center of your ship, then near the center of your ship, you would have much greater gravitational pull than you would near the outside of the ship.
Right. Okay. Okay. Yes.
The outer hull.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Actually, interestingly enough, there's a novel that I read as a teenager. The novel's called Sovereign.
Okay.
It was very ambitious to read as a teenager because it definitely dealt with a lot of issues that for most people would probably think is too much for teens to deal with as far as like sexuality and things like that. Because the main protagonist does have a very fluid sexuality based on the planet that he's from. Anyway, the designs of this is one of those things that I was one of those books I was devouring as a teenager when I was trying to figure out what I would ever do to make again a movie about combat in space.
Okay.
And they actually discussed the effects of having ships that had artificial gravity and the fact that the gravity generators in the center of the ship caused a whole host of problems. Now, how does that relate specifically to Star Wars? There are actually ships in the Star Wars Legends universe, the novel universe, that are called they are Imperial ships. They did appear in the Rebels TV series, so I guess they're considered canon at this point.
Okay.
The type of ships they are, they're called Interdictor Cruisers, Interdictor class. And the purpose of these ships are they actually generate gravity wells. So they can, let's say you're an Imperial fleet, right? You're commanding an Imperial fleet. You're on your Star Destroyer, okay. And you're attacking a bunch of rebels,
okay.
Right? And the rebels are trying to do a hit and run type of thing.
Okay.
They've hit this space station, or they've hit the mining installation where you're mining Tabana gas. Okay, so you're in Cloud City, basically.
Okay,
you're mining Tabana gas. The rebels have hit your installation of Tabana gas to try to make it so you don't have it.
Okay.
They're trying to escape. You're trying to engage them before they can escape. They have a lot of small ships, a blockade runner class ship, stuff that's supposed to be fast and get away quickly.
Okay.
You want to try to stop them. You only got a couple of Star Destroyers. So what do? You call in a couple of Interdictor Cruisers. They set up and they can start a gravity well generator that generates gravity wells that are akin to planetary gravity wells.
Okay.
That will mess up, that they mess up navigation for light speed and can actually trap the ship around a planet.
Whoa. Whoa.
Yeah, that was the theory behind them. The problem is, if you're on that ship generating that gravity, that gigantic gravity well, it's basically the same thing as if you hit the event horizon of a black hole. You're basically going to be spaghettified. Or you should be spaghettified.
Right, it would destroy the ship that's generating it.
It should, actually, and it should not only destroy the ship, it should kill the people that are on it,
right.
Because the extreme gravity should just crush them into nothing.
Right.
Their body shouldn't be able to. It's like the idea that, I don't know if you're familiar with the blobfish. You've seen pictures of a blobfish?
Yes.
Okay, and people are like, oh, look at that thing, it's so ugly. Well, the reason that it looks ugly is because it's actually adapted to living thousands and thousands of feet below the ocean where it is crushing pressure depth.
Right.
So that when it's in that place, in that state, it actually looks like a normal fish. But when you bring it up to all these atmospheric pressures, it's like us being out in space. There's no pressure holding us in. We just balloon out and nothing. Or like the they send up weather balloons to people will send them with cameras so that they can get to the edge of space and see the curvature of the Earth, and
Whoa.
The weather balloon pops.
Right.
The reason that the balloon pops is because there's not enough pressure holding the whatever gas you've put in the balloon
right.
in anymore. And so it just pops. There's no pressure, no air pressure from the outside.
Okay.
From space. That's basically what happens to the blobfish when it's brought up to sea level, is it's used to, it's designed and adapted to living at such intense pressure on every square millimeter of its body at all times. That pressure helps it retain its shape. When it's up here, there's no pressure to retain its shape anymore. It doesn't have the rigidity like we do of skeletons, or even regular fish do of skeletons, to help it retain its shape. It just turns into a blob. Because it doesn't need that rigidity there. It needs to actually be adapted to pressure that we can't withstand. It would kill us.
Okay, so because it's capable of holding in that amount of pressure, then the release of pressure, the drastic release of pressure as it comes to the surface, is like no sweat.
Just turns
right?
into a blob.
Yeah.
Just turns
it's like
into
no
a blob.
Sweat. It's already, it doesn't need those other things that we need. So what would crush us would be a non-factor for it.
Yeah. So,
wow.
So again, that's
okay.
So,
but yeah,
taking it back to Star Wars.
Yeah. Taking
it back to there. You have the Interdictor Cruiser, great, fine, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's terrible science, but it's also science fantasy, so they get away with terrible science in that. But here's the thing, right? Until the recent movies, I was really, really disturbed by how little used the capabilities of a lightsaber are. And
okay.
Still at this point, there's still one thing I have not seen a lightsaber do that I have always wanted to see a lightsaber do.
Okay.
As a kid, I often thought, wouldn't it be the greatest thing in the world just to hold a lightsaber up to somebody and then just turn it on into them? I mean, if you're a Sith assassin, that's how you assassinate somebody.
I think we've definitely talked about this before, but yeah.
We've talked about this and how great a moment it was, how horrible
you're
a
like,
moment
ooh.
Han Solo has to die, but how great a moment in that I'm literally sitting there in the theater going, oh my God, he's going to do it. He's going to do it. He's going to turn on a lightsaber into somebody. It's been done in cartoons. It was done in cartoons before that. The Clone Wars cartoon had done it, but like it hadn't been done in a movie. And, like, he turns on a lightsaber into him. And it's the most horrific thing. But, like, hey, if Han Solo is going to go out, that's a way to go out.
Right.
Be the first cinematic one to have the lightsaber turned on into him. Okay. So then you have, and then you have in The Last Jedi, not only is the lightsaber turned on into a dude, but it's actually manipulated and turned to face the dude before it's turned on into the dude, which is amazing. That adds another layer to it. Still, lightsaber turned on into a dude. I like it. It happens twice within a very small amount of time, too, which is like, yes, 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 this is what I want to see. Then in the final movie, you see them actually use the force with their hands to stop a lightsaber mid-swing and kind of force push the lightsaber back. Both Kylo Ren and Rey do this. Sorry, the movie's been out. If you haven't seen it, screw you.
It's been a while. It's on. Look, man, if you guys are watching Hamilton, turn around and watch.
Yes,
the,
please.
Yeah. Just turn around and watch. You already got Disney Plus. Just get it.
Yeah. And watch The Mandalorian too, cause it's great. But anyway, those were like some of the big things I wanted to see a lightsaber do. But why isn't anybody use the force to turn off another person's lightsaber?
Because
you can flick it on and throw it and it still stays lit. You don't have to hold the button down the whole time. Darth Vader does it.
Right.
I mean, the whole, you know, Obi-Wan has taught you well. Yeah, he taught him how to get the high ground. Yeah. What the hell?
Yeah.
And then he's like, I ain't going to jump up there. I remember what happened last time I jumped up there. I ain't going to jump up there. I'm going to throw my lightsaber at you. And it's still lit the entire time.
Question, so do you think
it can stay lit.
Do you think that that's a move that prequel-wise Lucas had planned? Like he knew that that's the way it happened the whole time. And then he finally was just like, I can write it in now. I'll put it in here. Because that is legit the absolute darkest, like aside from killing all the kids, that's legit the darkest part of the entire prequel series. The rest of it is so bright and colorful and so badly scripted that it just feels like the fight was so planned, you know?
No. I think he maybe considered it when he was making episode 3, but I don't think there was any part of the consideration when he was making Return of the Jedi that line would be in reference to Obi-Wan having the high ground at some point and saying something about the high ground. Because here's the deal.
You think it's just straight coincidence, or do you think he even had that in mind when he wrote the episode 3 fight scene?
The only thing that I can say that there's evidence to show that any part of episode 3 fight between Anakin and Obi-Wan, the only part of it that has any evidence as being connected to the original backstory of Darth Vader and the original reasonings is that it does say that in some of the original books, like the Star Wars has a bunch of those descriptive like picture books that have the actual picture of the character, like the photo, like the test pictures of the costumes and whatnot.
Right.
And it has descriptions of each part. It's like the visual encyclopedias for like all the different Star Wars things. They have tons of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the visual encyclopedias back in the early 90s. So this was before episodes 1, 2, and 3, when you may have been starting, even before you really was starting working on them, before even the special editions of episodes 4, 5, and 6 came out.
Right.
And those came out in 96, I believe. It says in there that Darth Vader's body was damaged by being thrown into a volcano by Obi-Wan. That is the only piece of it that seems like it was already predetermined. But you got to understand, there are so many things that he changed halfway through the stories. I mean, Luke Skywalker was originally Luke Starkiller, and he was an old general.
Right.
The main protagonist was going to be a young female. I mean, there are so many things that you have the Splinter of the Mind's Eye, which is a book that was written that's supposed to take place after Star Wars, and was written after Star Wars, not knowing whether they'd be able to make any more movies.
Mm-hmm.
This was before Empire got off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
That is the first discussion of a kyber crystal, and in the kyber crystal, and that is a singular thing. It's not just like tons of kyber crystals, but the kyber crystal is a singular thing, which is it's a singular locus of the force, and Luke and Leia both go searching for it, have a little romantic involvement, nothing heavy, but just minor romantic involvement, and Vader goes searching for it as well, and there's a big fight between all of them. And it's something that's not considered any canon. It's not Legends canon. It's not film Whoa. Canon. It's nothing. And so it was made in case they needed to make that as a movie if Star Wars had done badly, because it was going to be just a couple of characters on some like jungle planet. So it'd be really cheap and easy to make as a movie. Wouldn't Whoa. Require a whole bunch of special effects. So, I mean, there's a lot of continuity that has changed. And keep in mind, Lucasfilm was in charge of all of the Legends continuity and all the different books.
Yeah.
They approved all of that stuff. And that yeah. the Legends continuity goes hundreds and hundreds of years after the Battle of Endor.
Right.
So, I mean, there's a lot that I think has been... I don't think he had all of that planned ahead of time. I think he had a little bit planned to start with. Mm-hmm. And as it grew, he kind of maybe did some things to make things connect a little bit better. But no, I don't think there was a plan for that ahead of time.
Wow.
But anyway, back to my original point. Why have we never seen somebody shutting off somebody else's lightsaber? I mean, admittedly, it'd be boring to have a battle of two guys using the Force to turn each other's lightsabers on and off. But still.
That would be kind of funny. Just click, idea, click, 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 click.
Or what about the idea of being able to turn your own lightsaber on and off fast enough to swing at somebody? They go to parry. You turn it off.
And swing then turn through it their back parry. On. You
turn it back on. Yeah.
All right, that'd be dope.
Why have we not seen any of those things happen? If you're that in tune with the Force, it's never made sense to me why that's not been done.
Those would both be like, okay, I could definitely see like a Jedi maneuver being the just shut the lightsaber off of the other knight.
Yeah,
of the other Jedi.
But the other one is totally
that's a total Sith maneuver. Like that's something that should have been. That should have happened by now. The amount of time that they've had in order to do that. Who knows, man? Maybe you should just write a letter to John Favreau and see if they can write that shit in.
Yeah, especially since he's in charge of everything now.
Yeah. I mean,
he did The Mandalorian and it turned out good. So
yeah.
And he basically kickstarted the entire MCU. So there's that too.
Yeah.
I mean, what else can that guy do? Whatever he does, it's money.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, no, he's kicking ass.
He's so money, he doesn't even know he's money.
Oh, yeah. But, okay, so, yeah, Vegas, I mean, baby, I entirely... Oh, you did. but, yeah, I entirely agree. Like, those kind of maneuvers, like, I personally can't think of any right off the top of my head. I'm not as, you know, deep into the lore as you are on that. But, I mean, yeah, you know, that would be... All of that would be fantastic. To be real.
So get back into the X-Men universe here.
Oh, going back to X-Men. Universe. Okay.
Go back to especially the film X-Men universe. You go back to the X-Men, the second movie, X2, X-Men United, right?
Okay.
And we find Magneto in the beginning of that movie. He's in a plastic prison, right?
Yes.
Until, of course, a guard has an interesting encounter at a bar and gets... A giant amount of iron injected into his ass, which, by the way, that would have like really done bad things to him for his iron level to be that high. He right. probably would have found himself in the hospital with the toxic effects of having that much of a metal in him. But Magneto pulls all the iron out of him, makes himself a couple of balls to destroy everything with. Because I'm not even gonna talk about the symbolism in there with it, but he's also got a metal disc that he's able to levitate on to get out of his prison. But like, there's
a lot of iron.
Huh?
That's a lot of iron.
Well, there's enough iron in a human body. In fact, there's enough various magnetic metals. Because what's funny is they never necessarily specify that iron is the only metal. I mean, in fact, he's able to manipulate adamantium in
the first X-Men. Adamantium is magnetic. Yeah. So you ever hear about the comic continuity where he pulls like the liquid adamantium off of his skeleton and pulls it through his pores and incapacitates Wolverine? For like a month, and yes. Wolverine goes through this whole continuity. He goes through his whole independent story where he just his actual natural bone skeleton reinforces itself and rebuilds the claws he never had. as actual. No, I'm sorry. He had the bone claws. That's right. He had the actual bone claws. They wrote it in far past when the adamantium extraction happened, though.
Yeah.
As far as him getting the claws as a child and all that kind of shit, that was way after the adamantium was extracted, and they had to write it in to go, well, how did he get it if the claws were, you know, if the claws were installed in him, essentially, and that was the idea. But originally, anyway, with the Weapon X program. But that shit was that shit was nuts. How could he not do that? How could he not do that with any other human being? How much iron exists in a human being?
The thing is, there should be enough. There should be enough metallic metal within a human being. He doesn't need to extract it from their pores to kill them. That's not necessary at all. All he needs to do is have it block a single valve in the person's heart, and they're dead.
Oh, so he just concentrates all the iron in the blood through the bloodstream into the heart.
Into one valve of the heart.
One valve.
Boom. Dead. Instantly.
Yeah. He could think do that at any point.
Just sit there and concentrate with his hand out and have all, and what's the person going to do? Try to rush at him as suddenly his heart's having trouble beating? Fall down dead in front of him. So simple, so easy. This was always one that was interesting to me. Being a guy that played a lot of role-playing games, I always wanted to be able to do it. I never got the opportunity to do it because I always ended up with different characters that I had to play to help supplement a party. I always wanted to play an elemental wizard who focused on water. And conjuring water, controlling water, that kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. And just conjure water in somebody's throat.
Oh, whoa. Just conjure a ball of water?
You're fighting a beast of some type. Just conjure water into their throat as they're breathing.
Whoa.
Drown them. Why not?
Wait a minute. So you're telling me that, okay, so that's what you can do. This is way out of my wheelhouse.
There'd be spells where you can create water, right? So okay. Why not? And you do it in a location. Why not do it in their throat?
Yeah. Why don't you just put it in their lungs?
Yeah. Boom. Dead.
Shit.
Instantaneously. Same thing with a character like Dr. Manhattan, who can basically, from the Watchmen, for people who don't know who I'm talking about, he can basically change anything at a subatomic level. And he's fighting the Viet Cong, and he just kind of swipes aside, and they all just explode. Why do they need to explode? You can do anything with him. Admittedly, he is one of the ones that is used correctly in the sense that he can do anything, so he just does anything. It's like, well, I can just destroy you. You're destroyed. It's simple.
I still have to see the Watchmen. Not just the film. I want to see the series.
The series is a continuation of the original story, and there's some interesting things that it touches on. So I understand though it's pretty heavy to watch. But then the movie was too. Have you never seen the movie?
Never seen the movie.
You've never seen the movie. Okay. Have you read the graphic novel?
No, that's one of the ones I completely missed.
Okay, I will say this. There is, of course, major differences between the graphic novel and the movie. They should stand as their own two things.
Okay.
The movie is very, very interesting in the way it handles certain things. It does have some cringy scenes.
Mm-hmm.
If you come away from that not connecting to Rorschach, I'm actually going to be a little bit disappointed in you.
Okay.
I don't know if you'd I'm positive you'd never go to the extremes that Rorschach goes to.
Right.
But I think you'll understand where he's coming from. Rorschach is basically he's basically Batman without the money.
Oh, well, I'm already there.
But he's without the money and therefore without the ability to have Batman's money allows him to be humane when he deals with criminals.
Right.
Because he has the ability to have gadgets and have all these other things going for him.
Right.
If Batman had no money, he would have to rely on being more brutal. It wouldn't be about fear and intimidation. It would be about brutality. And right.
The thing is that Batman has the gadgets and the capability to instill fear without being really full-on brutal.
Interestingly, there is a Batman analog in Night Owl, who does have the money and the ability.
It's an owl.
But yes, of course it's an owl. In many ways, that's Rorschach is just it's what Bruce would have become if he wasn't a rich kid. And he didn't have the financial support and the butler that may or may not have been his dad, you know, depending on which continuity you want to look at.
Butler dad.
And by the way, seriously, anybody that's surprised by that, there are theories in different continuities that Alfred may have actually been Bruce's father and not Thomas.
Okay, in fact, that's great.
It's one of the theories of the Nolanverse, actually. Because really? Of the fact that it's not, Nolan has not said that it's so, it's just one of the fan theories. Just like the fan theory of the Joker having been a military personnel, which would have been impossible because then when he was taken into the prison or the jail, if they had done any amount of processing on him, they would have been able to find his records within the armed services records. Fingerprints, DNA sample, anything like that would come up in armed services records.
Right.
But nothing ever came up, so they never knew his identity. So he couldn't have been a soldier. But some of his tactics and some of the ways that he does things made people theorize he might have been a soldier at some point.
Well, his ability to walk in formation and aim was extremely convincing, let's say.
Well, I mean,
also his tactics. He has a psychological tactic to him that is beyond. It works beyond your standard.
It would make you think that he was in Spec War or something like that. Special warfare.
Yeah, he was in some level of Spec Ops or PsyOps or something like that he would know how to do things like that.
Or he's just somebody that's really, really bored and has an issue with society.
This is also very true.
There's the other theory, of course, in that movie that the triggers for the two boats.
Yeah,
they blow up their own boats, not the other boat.
Of course they would.
Yeah.
He lies about everything else. Why would he lie about that?
Yeah. But anyway. Watch Watchmen at some point. But
we got way off the rails.
No, we didn't. Not too far. We're still in the comic book world. Dr. Manhattan, though, is one of those super, super, super powerful characters that they use properly in the sense that nobody can really defeat him because he is just beyond the level of power. You have somebody like Superman that, like, literally, even when he was dead, he wasn't actually dead. All that he needed to do was go lay out in the sun for a day or two, and he would have been perfectly fine.
Well, he did that shit through the ground, and he was fine.
Yeah. He got a little bit of solar radiation, and he was able to come back to life. If they had just like, oh, he got stabbed to death. Oh crap! If they had literally just laid him out in front of the sun, and like, hey, just you know what? Take him to the beach for a while. Just take dude to the beach. Just lay him on the beach.
Lay him out. Fine. Put a pair of sunglasses on him, Weekend to Bernie style, and just have him lay out on a towel for like a week and see what happens.
Oh my god! I am just imagining right now. Batman and the Flash carrying around Superman on a Weekend at Bernie's thing. Seriously, damn! I need to cut. This is a robot chicken sketch. You have
Superman
Batman and
dies
Flash
and Batman
around.
And the Flash Weekend at Bernie's him to get him back to life.
And you see, they round a corner at like the beach, and there's Wonder Woman in a bikini, and she waves, and like Batman makes Superman wave. And whatnot, and it's like, yeah, that's it, right?
She doesn't even know. She doesn't even know. Just she doesn't even know.
Exactly. This is, I see that happening. But
that would
be
great. That would be brilliant.
Superman is literally. They had to create something that was a weakness for him because otherwise he's unstoppable. He is an unstoppable god. So they had to create a green glowy rock that made him weak. Because without the green glowy rock, it's pointless, right? What bad guy is going to hurt him?
Yeah.
Even Doomsday, like, even in the modern movie, the Dawn of Justice movie, Doomsday was still not beating him. It wasn't until they used the Kryptonian spear on both of them. mm-hmm. kryptonite spear on both of them mm-hmm. that it actually killed them. But like, he could have just stood there and kept fighting with Doomsday. It's like, okay, well, let's keep going. Dude got nuked. And of course, what happens? He's nuked. He's all shriveled up and dying. And the sun comes out, which it's again, radiation again. I'm not sure how that works exactly. Radiation from a nuke hurts him, but radiation from the sun helps him. I think we have a problem here.
That's another continuity issue right there. We're going back to square one on this. I like this. Full circle. But
still, I mean, still, they had to create some, and that's the other thing. They did actually discuss this during the Death of Superman comic arc.
Yeah.
That when he was fighting Doomsday, they at least in the, I read the novelization as well as seeing the comics. In the novelization, it has, you know, some of the inner thought going on of Superman at the time he's fighting
yeah.
Doomsday.
Yeah.
And he's kind of has the inner dialogue with himself of like, he's always held back when fighting people because mm-hmm. he doesn't know how much his strength could, you know, what damage his strength could cause. So he's always held back a little bit, but this time he's not holding back. He has to give everything out to defeat Doomsday. And so, I mean, you find these moments where they have those little caveats of, yeah, he's never really fought up to his full potential. Because if he did, he's basically unstoppable.
Oh, he is
a god.
Oh yeah. And yeah, he definitely is. That's actually the biggest and I, you know what, if there's anybody that knows this, if there's anybody that's seen it, I fully stand by it. There's a show that I watch on YouTube called Death Battle. I think I've had you watch one or two episodes. Have I ever had
yes,
you,
they're bullshit.
They're bullshit. They go in
they're
detail.
Bullshit.
Are you talking about the vote based one or are you talking about the actual stat based one?
Okay, no, the one that I watched, I just disagreed with because I said it was because I think it's bullshit.
Which one was it?
It was the Green Dragon Zord against Mechagodzilla, and I still call bullshit.
Didn't Mechagodzilla win?
Yes, and that's why I call bullshit.
Why?
Because the Green Dragon Zord is better.
But no, you don't just say is better in general. See, this is the okay. So this is the argument.
That's my only argument. That's why. That's all I can say. Damn it.
Okay, so check this shit out. You should see the one with fucking what do they do? I can't remember who it is. It's one. Oh, I think it's Naruto versus Obi-Wan Kenobi or one of the characters from Naruto. Oh, it's Naruto's teacher versus Obi-Wan Kenobi, and it's younger Ewan McGregor Obi-Wan that they work with, but they take all of the stats. And the biggest difference between the two is the fact that the Naruto character takes from, I believe his power is internal. So his ability to focus is based upon his internal capabilities. And Obi-Wan just pulls from the fucking force. His power source is infinite. It's everywhere, all of the time. And so his capability of doing and being able to focus and moving at whatever speed is inherently, theoretically infinite in comparison to the other character because the Naruto character had personal physical limits. Because they were stuck within himself. Obi-Wan doesn't have those limits. He pulls from outside of himself in order to use that to fight in this death battle. But what I'm getting at and what I'm talking about with this is that you hit the nail on the head. Superman is practically a god. He is theoretically a god among men. And the only thing that stops Superman from just being a fully omnipotent dictator being that takes over this entire planet or anything else is the simple fact that he has a moral code that he has to stand by that is continually challenged, and the moral code stops him from interfering too deeply in essentially human affairs. It's this big moral issue where how deep can I get into this where humanity continues to destroy itself? How far do I go before I end up making the decision that just stops humanity's freedom of choice and its capability to move forward and do what it must
in order
to continue.
that's been discussed when he decides to go against that in a couple of different video games, the Injustice series, for instance.
Oh man,
discusses what happens when you get Superman too mad and he decides to abandon his moral code just a tiny bit.
Definitely,
then things go really, really bad.
Yes,
you don't want despotic Superman.
But what I'm getting at is the episode. That everybody lost their shit over so much that they had to do a second episode to make sure.
Are you talking Superman versus Goku?
Yes, absolutely. And I thought it was absolutely well-founded, because the problem was, again, this was an issue of the fact that Goku constantly strives to push himself to the next level. And no matter how many times that they retcon that Goku has found his most powerful self, and then they create another version of Super Saiyan, what the fuck ever version that he is, and pit him against whatever multiple aliens or whatever he has the capability of doing, Goku at root has a moral mistranslation to his character. So, are you familiar with the Japanese story Journey to the West?
Goku is basically based on the Monkey King.
Yes. Yeah. Son Goku is based on the Monkey King, and essentially one of his major moral issues is the fact that Goku constantly strives to make himself better, and he will continue to fight until he can no longer breathe. He will fight until he dies. He will die fighting, and he dies, he gets overwhelmed, he trains in the afterlife and comes back more powerful, which is just stupid. I think it's just a dumb mechanic and the worst MacGuffin I've ever seen, but I'm willing to forgive that for the continued entertainment, the Japanese soap opera that is Dragon Ball. Now that being said, Goku's his drive is to make himself more. He has to be more powerful. He has to get to the next level. He has to test his limits. And he will not stop himself. He will not stop until he knows that he has defeated the enemy in front of him.
The idea being that Superman's only going to fight for defense of innocent things, or in defense of things. He's not going to keep fighting and keep fighting.
Well, here's the thing.
Goku would keep fighting and keep fighting.
Goku would just fight and keep fighting and keep fighting. Eventually, what happens is Goku ignores the fact that, like, the fight and the enemy in front of him are the only thing that exists. He becomes horse-blinded to the fight as it happens. So then he loses his moral ground. The problem is that when Dragon Ball was translated to an American audience, they actually had this whole sequence. He had a full monologue that is completely mistranslated, and he calls himself like a hero for good and like all this kind of bullshit, which was never something that Goku was about ever. He was always about being the strongest. That was his thing. Goku at root, whether or not he is a family man or whether or not he protects the Earth, that is a side effect to the fact that he has essentially a villainous mindset. That villainous mindset is to be the most powerful all the time. And multiple people will come challenge him, multiple different species and warlords and fighters will challenge him and test their strength against him because he is the pinnacle of strength. But to be that, he has to ignore everything else. He doesn't do anything to protect anyone except for those he loves. He protects his wife. He protects his friends. He protects his son. But that's where he stops. He doesn't care if you go mowing down 50 buildings while you're trying to fight somebody. Now, here's what's wrong with that and the difference between Goku and Superman. Superman already is essentially omnipresent. Not omnipresent, but he is pretty much as all-powerful as you can get.
All-powerful, yeah.
And he is the closest to omnipresent that a single being can possibly be. The capability to move, the speed he has, how far he can hear.
Now hold on. Omnipresent would have to do with the ability to know everything, and he really doesn't. That's the one place where.
So when I mean omnipresent, I mean to be everywhere at once, not necessarily. Yeah, you're. I thought that was omniscient.
That's not, that's, well, it's kind of, okay, yeah, I get what you're saying. You're right. Omniscient is more the thought frame, but even omnipresent, he technically can't be everywhere at once. Like the standard understanding of God in the God of the Bible, right?
Right.
Is that technically he's supposed to be everywhere at once. He's at every point on the earth at one time. He can see and hear everything that's happening.
Time is a non-factor, all of that. Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be omniscient and omnipresent.
Right.
Superman doesn't quite fall into that because he can only technically be in one place at one time. And technically he is not the fastest being in his world. That definitely goes to Flash. Flash is way faster than him.
True. He's able to hear a fucking... There's the thing, man. He's able to hear a cockroach fart from 50 light years away.
I understand that he has amazing abilities, but that's it ends at the sense of his abilities are basically as powerful as they could possibly be in any semi-mortal creature.
Right. And the thing about Superman, though, is that although there are extraneous factors of weaknesses depending on what he's exposed to, which makes no sense that his home planet stops him from being like pieces of his home planet stop him from being.
It makes no sense that one classification of sun is going to give him all this power, whereas another classification of sun just made him normal. But
right, and also remember the pieces of his home planet, which apparently are now toxic, do not apply when they're under that sun, because if that was the case, Kryptonians would never exist because they would just die on the planet they were born on.
Well, no, the kryptonite has been made because of the explosion of Krypton. That's what...
Oh, it's a highly radioactive material?
Yeah, that's what activated the material in the different ways. Okay. There's been multiple kinds of kryptonite that have plagued Superman over the years.
There's different colors,
Yeah, you need a specific plot device to weaken basically a godlike character.
Essentially. And so here's the thing. Because he has the capability of such extreme power, he also has the capability of extreme precision. And the way that they end the fight is fantastic. In the first fight, they practically destroy the Earth and Superman survives. Superman hunts down the Dragon Balls and resurrects Goku and restores the planet. And then Goku wants to continue fighting. So he's like, oh, no, I don't want to. Fine, whatever. And so they go at it. As soon as he realized that Goku is completely ignorant of the fact that he's causing a mass amount of just wanton destruction in his path, Superman finally just says, fuck it. And he goes, I'm sorry. And he uses laser vision to lobotomize him. And it's done. He lobotomizes him through his skull. He doesn't take his skull off. He doesn't even fry his head. He just melts his brain. And then that's it. Because Superman could do that. He's actually proven himself to performed partial lobotomies to nullify the superpowers of other people.
And he actually uses his laser vision to shave.
Yes. He uses his laser vision to shave.
Work.
There's a great one where a clone of there's an animated film where a clone of him walks into a hair salon because there was a he's a clone of Superman who was created by Lex Luthor so he could perform and do Superman things after Superman died, and then at the end of the day. Was it
the Superboy clone?
No, it wasn't a Superboy clone. It was a different one. It was another. I'll have to link you the movie.
Okay.
He at the end of the day, after Superman does all of his stuff. Oh, this is the big fucking spider cartoon one. The one that I was telling you about.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, he goes to Luthor, and Luthor has a chip programmed in his head that stops him from fighting back against Lex Luthor personally, specifically. So Luthor puts on a pair of gloves and just basically rails into fucking Superman for however long he sees fit. And he's just like, okay, you can go. And that's it. And so after he does Superman things all day long, Luthor beats the crap out of him, and that's how Luthor, quote-unquote, wins. Well, eventually, this Superman clone finds out about the chip device in a file, and so he walks into a hair salon at one point and performs brain surgery on himself through the mirror, where he heats up a hole in his forehead with laser vision and then grabs a pair of, like, it would be forceps, but it's a hair salon, so scissors?
Yeah.
And shoves the scissors into his forehead and plucks the chip out of his forehead and then cauterizes the wound and leaves. No explanation to anybody. And now he's, like, full, unfettered Superman clone. Just
there you go.
Yeah, great plot device. Fantastic plot device. But even copies of him are capable of that type of precision. And I think it's...
So what we're saying is that there have actually been moments, to tie back to our original purpose of this podcast, there actually have been moments that one of the most powerful superheroes around, if not the most powerful superhero, Superman, has actually used all these various powers of his for good purposes at different points in time. But most of the time, the excuse is he tries to keep him in restraint. Which, by the way, just to end the argument for everybody, I am a Marvel fan. I am more of a Marvel fan than I am a DC fan. But whenever people talk about, oh, what would happen if the Avengers went up against the Justice League? I'm going to tell you right now what would happen if the Avengers went up against the Justice League. Basically, the rest of the Justice League would step back. Flash would encircle the Avengers and make it so they couldn't basically go anywhere. And then Superman would just destroy every single one of them if that was what was necessary. The thing is, there is not a single one of the Avengers that has the capability to stand up to Superman in a fight. And even put together, if Superman had been involved in the Infinity War, Thanos would have been dead. It's just that simple.
Do you think
he would have punched Thanos into another world?
So legit.
Just that simple.
Legit question. Do you think that Superman would be able to hold, like, do you think the Hulk would be able to hold his own against Superman?
No.
No? You think Superman would just have him wrapped up, done?
I mean, the thing is, if Thanos was able to beat the Hulk, then Superman could beat him no problem. The Hulk gets more powerful the more angry he gets.
Right.
But Superman can punch him with a single punch hard enough to knock him completely out. Once he's out, he's out.
Yeah. If you're just talking tit for tat.
It's been proven he can be knocked out. And that's the thing is, the rest of the Justice League can just sit back and watch. And the only purpose of the Flash is just to keep them all corralled together.
Right.
To make it easier for Superman. But there is not a single member of the Avengers that could take down Superman, especially not one-on-one, but not as a group. The only way that that's happening is if for some reason they have their hands on Kryptonite. No Kryptonite? Sorry. Superman is having a field day with every single one of them. There's only one or two Marvel. Well, let me rephrase. If Scarlet Witch is there, Superman might have some problems. The Scarlet Witch is probably the only one who could go up against it, or Doctor Strange. Technically not an Avenger during the movies, but until the end. Now, those would be the only ones that would give him some trouble because Superman has a weakness against magic for some reason.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the big catch. Right.
So I'll amend and say if Doctor Strange or Scarlet Witch is with them, then you got a decent fight.
Yeah.
But otherwise, and then I would put it more on the Avengers as winning because there's just more of them than the Justice League. But there's that. But anyway, I think we went far abreast of our original topic, we still ended up talking about superhero powers. I still want to see somebody transported out into space in Star Trek. Come on.
I want to see a lightsaber get shut off mid-swing and turned back on. That'd be dope.
Hell yes, I want to see that. Yeah, I want to see that
would be dope.
So, so very much. Or just even the fact that, why did Darth Vader have to use the Force to crush somebody's throat? Again, just use the Force to crush their aorta a little bit. All they need is to have their aorta rupture and they're dead instantly. Their entire blood volume will bleed out into their body cavity within 3 minutes. Aortic dissection is no joke, people. That thing will kill you instantaneously. And almost is almost impossible to know that it's happening. It's just suddenly your aorta is shredded and all your blood is gone.
Oh, man.
It's gone. So, well, it's already gone. It's all filling up your insides and not staying in the arteries and veins and vessels that it should be in. So, I mean, it's just that simple. Just, you know, flick of the finger and suddenly you'd have a giant hole in your aorta and you're bleeding out into your body cavity. Why you got to take the whole time to choke him? I mean, maybe it's a masochistic thing. I don't know. Maybe he gets off on it. We don't know. Yeah. We don't want to know. Point being that I do think that sometimes creative minds can have a lot of fun with these powers, but at the same time, I understand the reason for keeping these powers in check because it's less fun. It really is less fun when all somebody has to do is flick a finger and the person bleeds to death internally. You know, sometimes it's nice to be able to see a protracted lightsaber battle to, you know, enjoy the badassery of it, even though it could be done so much quicker, you know. Substance. There's an art and a flair to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
But still, it's fun to ponder what diabolical things we would do with the various powers that these and the various technologies that these people have. Anyway, Mike.
Yes.
As we usually do at this time of the show, where can people be listening to us, even though they're already listening to us?
Yes. Well, you can listen to us. You can listen to us at thezenialchronicles.com or zenchron.com, spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N. You'd also catch us at Zenchron at Facebook and on Twitter. I'm still teaching James about that Instagram thing. We'll make it happen. But after that, we were all...
Hey, I'm old, okay? I'm old.
All right.
Have trouble with these things.
It's okay. We'll take it slow. All right. But on top of that, we're also available on a lot of the major podcasting forums, especially Google and Apple and everywhere. Tune in.
if you're looking for it, check out anywhere you like to listen to podcasts and type in the word Zenial. And
you'll find us.
Come up because, yeah, we're one of the top podcasts about Zenials because I guess people just don't want to recognize and talk about the beautiful experience it is to be a Zenial in the world today.
Yeah, man, there's just not enough of apparently there's not enough of us want to talk about it. But you know what?
Just remember, you got us Harry to listen Potter to. Is one of us. Not the actor, not Daniel Radcliffe, but the character Harry Potter, he's a Zenial.
I think Daniel Radcliffe is also – no, wait, no, he's a millennial.
Daniel Radcliffe, yeah, he's a millennial. Yeah,
he's not a Zenial. He's a millennial.
No.
But anyways, on top of that, also, you can find us on YouTube. Search for the Zenial Chronicles on YouTube. We're actually trying to get up to 100 subscribers. And then from there, we can actually have a URL that we can give you for our YouTube channel. So go subscribe to our channel. Make sure that if you're listening to this on YouTube, hit that like button, click the bell, leave us a comment. Leave us a comment on the regular page, on the regular podcast, and we will listen to them or we will read them and... Respond to them and all that fun stuff.
Unless you're a bot. I don't like bots.
Mm-mm. James is not a fan of bots. He doesn't like them at all.
Not a fan of bots. No. No. Bad experiences watching the original Terminator as a kid. Also have an issue with people with Austrian accents. That's a whole other story. Anyway.
I'll make sure to buy you an Austrian bot for Christmas then.
As long as it comes with some schnitzel. Anyway. Thank you all for listening, and we will be back again next week.
Have a good one.
Thank you for tuning in, friends. The journey continues next week.